Good morning. On this sunny, warm day, I mean, inside is warm. All right, so before we start with talking about samsara and to get out of it, so to say, then we try to generate correct motivation. So we're going to talk about karma and the wheel of life, right? And the 12 links of dependent origination, which can be explained according to the what they normally say, the three scopes of the Lamrim. Yeah, so pressure, human rebirth, liberation, and enlightenment. So that can be one of the motivations, for example, you can think of. Another motivation is to purify the negative karma and to change the mind in a particular direction to eliminate destructive emotions and progress on the path to more sustainable happiness, so to say. So try to generate a motivation for yourself. And then we do some prayers, starting on page number 5 of the prayer booklet. So then, when we start with the prayers, you can think, if you feel comfortable, to visualize Sakyamuni Buddha in front and surrounding yourself all the sentient beings of the six realms, experience individual suffering, and think for their purpose you're here, to liberate them, and for their purpose you lead them in the prayer. And think like that as well. To the founder, the own transcendent destroyer, the one gone beyond, the full destroyer, the complete, perfect, full awakened being, perfect in knowledge and a good conduct, the guardian of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods, human beings, to you, the complete and fully awakened one, the own transcendent destroyer, the glorious conqueror, the subduer from the Sakya clan, a prostrate make offerings, go for refuge. To the founder, the own transcendent destroyer, the one gone beyond, the full destroyer, the complete, perfect, full awakened being, perfect in knowledge and a good conduct, Sagata know of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and human beings, to you, the complete and fully awakened one, the down transcendent destroyer, the glorious conqueror, the subduer from the Sakya clan, the prostrate make offerings, go for refuge. To the founder, down transcendent destroyer, the one gone beyond, the full destroyer, the complete, perfect, fully awakened being, perfect in knowledge and a good conduct, Sagata know of the world, supreme guide of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and human beings, to you, the complete and fully awakened one, the down transcendent destroyer, the glorious conqueror, the subduer from the Sakya clan, a prostrate make offerings, go for refuge. When, O Supreme, amongst humans, you were born on this earth, you played out in seven strides in that same supreme in this world. To you, O wise and a prostrate, with pure bodies, form supremely pure, wisdom ocean like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the three worlds, winner of the best, Lord, to you, prostrate. With the supreme signs, face like a spotless moon, god like gold to you prostrate. Thus free like you, the three worlds are not, incomparable wise one to you prostrate. The Savior having great compassion, the founding having all understanding, the field of merit that God is like a vast ocean, to you the gone to dustness I prostrate. The purity that frees from attachment, the virtue that frees from the lower realms, the one part sublime pure reality, the Dharma that pacifies I prostrate. Those who are liberated and show the path to liberation, the holy field qualified with realization, who are devoted to the moral precepts, to you, sublime community, intending virtue, I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma refuge, homage to the great Sangha, to all three ever devote homage, to all worldly of respect, bound with bodies, as many as all realms and all aspects, with supreme fate I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous actions, perform only perfect virtuous actions. Subdue your mind thoroughly, this is the teaching of the Buddha. A star, a mirage, a flame of a lamp, an illusion, a drop or a dew or a bubble. A dream, a flash of lightning, a cloud, see conditioned things as such. To these merits, may sentient beings attain the rank of all seeings, subdue the full faults and be delivered from samsara ocean, perturbed by the waves, aging, sickness and death. Then the Heart Sutra. Thus did I at one time, the Bhagavan was dwelling on the mass virtuous mountain in Rajgir, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration of the categories of phenomena called profound perfection. Also at that time, the bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty and right nature. Then to the Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra, said the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokitesvara, how should any son of the lineage to train who wishes to practice activities of profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Viglisvara said this to Nirvana Shariputra. Shariputra, and his son of the lineage, or daughter of the lineage, who wishes to practice activities of the profound perfection of wisdom, should look upon it like this. Correctly and repeating, beholding those five aggregates also empty in nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, and form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, composition of factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena emptiness without characteristics, produced, unseen, stainless, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, an emptiness is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no composition of factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visible form, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomena. There is no eye element, and up to and including no mind element, and no mental conscious element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, up to including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similar, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and part. There is no exalted wisdom, and no attainment, and also non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, the bodhisattvas rely and dwell in perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifest complete awakened to the unsubdued, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra of equal to the unequal, the mantra that thoroughly pacified all suffering should be known as the truth since it is not false. The mantra of perfection of wisdom is declared, Tayata, Gatagata, Paragata, Parasamgata, Bodhisattva. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, should train in profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended to Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Viglisvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that. I should practice a profound affection of wisdom, just as you have indicated, and even Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the Virenbashara Putra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Viglisvara, those in their surrounding and their entirely, along with the worlds of gods, humans, asuras, gandhavas, were overjoyed and highly praised by the word by the Bhagavan. I prostrate to the gathering of the kinis of the three chakras who abide in holy yoga using space. By your clear powers and clear voice and maximum illumination, look at the practitioner like a mother for a child. Akasama rasasana sama. Agasamara sasana samara samaraya pe tayata gadagata paragata parasamgata bodhisoha. By the teaching of the three supreme jewels possessing the power of truth, may in and outer realms be transformed, may they be dispelled, may they be pacified, may they be completely pacified. May all negative forces opposed to the Dharma be completely pacified, and may the host of 80,000 obstacles be pacified. And may we be separated from the problems and harmful conditions to the Dharma, and may all acknowledge in accordance with the Dharma, and may be auspiciousness and perfect happiness here and right now. Then short mandala, page 16. Sa ji bu gi jo ji me do dra ri ra le ji ni Sang ye je du me de he va ni ro ge nam da je la je ba jo i nam guru ra nam da la ga Taya mi sangye chodan so ni so nam la Chanchu bada dani yasu ji Dagi chushu gibu tsunam gi Ola penche sangye duba shu sangye chodan so ni so nam Chanchu bada dani yasu ji Dagi chushu gibu tsunam gi Rola penche sangye du bha jo sangye chodan suni chana Janjo bado dani yazuji dagi chuji gibe tsunamgi dola penje sangye do bajo. Yeah, so today, starting with a quotation of the great Seventh Dalai Lama, in one of his works it says, Janju Choge Ranshin Chin, Semji Kyun La Kyaba Ni, Mato Korva Kyamba Nam, Dera Dagi Sem Yedos, meaning the supreme potential, so to say, or the supreme nature of Buddhahood, yeah, the potential to achieve Buddhahood, abides in the continuums of all sentient beings. And by not having realized that ultimate nature of reality of the mind, these transmigrators wander around in samsara. And for that purpose, I generate bodhicitta, or for that purpose, I generate the mind of enlightenment. It is a very powerful kind of verse that actually summarizes the whole part. Yeah, that how we all have a kind of potential to achieve liberation and enlightenment, right? But if we don't know or understand that potential, then like all sentient beings, we're just wandering around in this cycle of, you know, cyclic existence, yeah, of birth, sickness, aging, death, and that continues after again and again and again. So seeing that all sentient beings have the potential to get rid of this not seeing or not realizing the ultimate nature of reality, yeah, that ignorance. Yeah. So by seeing that, and also seeing that out of the power of ignorance, sentient beings create these kind of causes for suffering all the time, then, and out of not knowing, so for that purpose, I generate the body-mind. For that purpose, I like to become a Buddha. Yeah. So that is a very powerful verse, because also it proves that you can eliminate this ignorance, and if you understand you can eliminate this ignorance, you can also understand you will able to eliminate the suffering of all sentient beings without exception. Yeah, so that's so because what we're going to talk about today about karma and the wheel of life, yeah, so if you understand that process well, then it will give you a very good insight in actually why we're suffering and how we can get out of the suffering, right? So the 12 links of the normally karma is being explained from the point of view of the small scope of the lambrim, right? So if you like to accomplish a higher state of rebirth as a human being with all the right causes and conditions, yeah, you have to act according to karma. Yeah, that's why it's in the lambrim. It falls in the category of the lower scope, right? So the 12 links, same thing, yeah, because it's related. So the 12 links also can be explained according to the lower scope, because you prevent yourself, as we're going to talk about, not to propel in lower state of existence, right? Yeah. So you propel yourself in lower states of existence, prevent yourself from that, you know? So, yeah. Yeah, anyway, something came to my mind by hearing this, but yeah. So that's from the point of view lower scope. From the point of view of the middling scope, it also teaches us how to get out of the cycle, yeah, of rebirth. Yeah, so that's, it can explain according to the middling scope. And just that verse I quoted from the Seventh Dalai Lama actually refers to the great scope, right? So if you understand ignorance well in the mind of all sentient beings, you also see you can eliminate them. Yeah, so the 12 links of dependent origination, you can explain according to the, yeah, different scopes of the what we call the lamrim, or stages of the path to enlightenment. Yeah. So, but in order to start with the 12 links, which is mainly explained in the lamrim, in the middling scope, right? In order to understand the suffering of samsara in general, yeah, so then how to get out of that cycle, yeah, so then the 12 links have been explained. And karma is then explained at the level of the small scope, yeah. So first we talk a little bit about karma before we enter, before we actually try to understand the 12 links, yeah. So, so karma, or action, right, The name of karma, that Sanskrit term karma, actually translates in Tibetan as action, le, right? So that means activity. Yeah. So activity of body, speech, and mind. Yeah. We have kind of three activities. We can summarize all our activities in those three fold category, either with the body, or with the speech, or with the mind. Yeah. And among those three activities we have, the most important one is the mind. Why? Because everything originates from the mind. Yeah? Samsara as well as nirvana originates from the mind. Yeah? Happiness as well as suffering originates from the mind. Yeah? Our physical and verbal behaviors are motivated by mental intentions. Yeah? So this is also originated from the mind. Yeah? So that's why, and yeah, even in quantum physics, in all, you know, many aspects of the uncertainty principle, what has been you know, observed, or what has been actually found, depends also on the observer, right? So in that regard, yeah, the mind plays a very crucial role in our daily life, right? So that's why it's very important to understand that. And then karma is, there's a lot of misunderstanding regarding karma. Yeah, some people think it's a kind of a magical play somewhere in the universe, or somewhere in the brain, or somewhere in the body, or like a magical thing. But actually karma is not that magical at all. Yeah, karma is kind of law of cause and effect. Right, action. Yeah. So by depending on the mental attitude, we think in a particular way, or we motivate ourselves to say something, or we do physical act. Right. So all these activities basically is karma. Right. So there's a different levels of complexity as well, but that's by itself also karma. Right. And then basically karma is a law of cause and effect. Yeah. Law of particular cause, conditions, and result, right? So we have an external form of cause and effect relationships, right? Like buildings, plants, you know, trees. You know, if you put a seed with the right kind of conditions, fertilization, heat, moisture, it will grow in the plant, right? And a sprout in a tree. So that's cause and effect relationships, right? So that's an external one. External one in the sense of not within the continuum of a particular sentient being or a particular person, right? So that cause and effect relationship within the continuum of a sentient being or a person or human being, if you simplify it a bit more. So that cause and effect relationship within the continuum of a particular individual, that's what we call one aspect of karma, right? That's cause and effect relationships, you know, in a particular continuity. Yeah. So that we can see that particular habituations being built up over a particular period of time, they can repeat themselves in the future. Yeah, because of this kind of karmic relationships, of cause and effect relationship. Yeah, so it's karma is not that magical, it's just kind of dependent origination, cause and effect relationships. Yeah. So certain aspects of karma are easier to be understood, other aspects of karma are more difficult and complex. Yeah, so that anger, the destructive emotions, so to say, anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, yeah, or other things like anxiety and fear, you know, those kind of things are being classified as destructive emotions, right? So they cause suffering to come about. Yeah, so they classified in the Buddhist context in the category of non-virtuous, yeah, meaning not virtuous or not producing good deeds or not producing happiness. Yeah, the definition of virtue is that which produces happiness. The definition of non-virtue is that which produces suffering. Yeah, so these destructive emotions or afflictions, as we technically call it, they fall in this category of that which produces suffering. Yeah, so it's been labeled as non-virtue. Yeah, so that is also karma, right? That when you get agitated at a particular person, you act out of anger, then a few minutes or sometimes a few seconds of irritation can produce hours of suffering or mental distress, right? That's also karma. Yeah, that's also one aspect of karma. There are much more complex aspects of karma, right? So the kind of the hidden or the very hidden aspects of phenomena, you know, like the example of when we here together today, when did we create a cause for being here today? In this particular place, at this particular time, with these particular individuals together, right? That's there's not random. You know, there's everything is cause and effect relationships. Yeah. So when that is being created is a very complex system. Yeah. So that's is for us not that easy to know when. I don't know how many lifetimes ago, maybe it was somewhere else, and then we met or something like that, you know. So when that happened, we don't know, right? For us ordinary beings, it's kind of a hidden phenomena. Yeah. So the same we see in nature, yeah, that particular aspects of nature, if you put a seed and put fertilization, then that it grows in a particular plant is, you know, it's easy to predict if all the right conditions are present, right? That's a very easy kind of system. Yeah, but if you talk about a system within one aspect of the universe, it's so complex because there's so many variables playing a role, what actually produces this complete kind of process of causes and conditions, right? So that's much more difficult to understand. Yeah, still, at the present moment, even, you know, on the quantum level, still there's so many things we still don't understand because it's very complex. Yeah, so the more complex a particular process is, the more difficult it will be to understand it. Yeah, so that's true in science and cosmology, quantum physics, even psychology, right? So in aspects of neuroscience we still don't understand, right? Because it's very complex. You know? So that means for our mind, same thing. The simple things of that anger produces suffering, right? That cause and effect relationship, from an experiential, subjective point of view, we can realize. I mean, realize, understand. Yeah, that's a very simple process. It's very isolated, not too many variables, and that's very easy to actually see, understand. But the more complex it becomes, you see, the more variables start to play a role, the more difficult it will be to understand the process. Yeah, so that's with karma is the same thing. Yeah, there's a few things to know about karma. Yeah, so karma is also not fixed. Also, many people, they have this kind of idea that karma is fixed. You know, they think, yeah, it's my karma, I have to go to this, you know, that's one vision some people have. Or some people say, I have to learn from this, because, you know, that's why I'm experiencing it. That's also one view many people have. Yeah, so karma is not fixed. Why is it not fixed? Because it's based on causes and conditions, right? So it can be changed. Yeah, karma is a changeable factor, you know, we can even... On a daily basis, we create so much karma by our activities, right? When I said verbal, physical, and mental, yeah? So that's going on, and then we can change. We know with neuroplasticity, we can change the mind. We can change the brain, yeah? So we know there's a possibility for change. And that's also true for karma, yeah? So even some people will undergo a particular problem in life, and they think, oh, I have to experience this, I have to learn from this, you know, that's another view, you know, I cannot change it anymore, I have to go through this, right? That's also not correct, because you can change, right? We can change even our view towards a particular problem. Yeah, sometimes you have a huge problem, but how we mentally think about it makes a huge difference in the acceptance of issues in life, right? So that's why karma is not fixed. And another aspect is that it's changeable, right? Negative karma, which produces suffering, can be purified. Yeah, so that means that even the worst negative karma of the act of killing, for example, you know, can be purified. You know, so we have these famous examples of Akumilimala at the time of the Buddha. Yeah, we killed so many human beings and met the Buddha and did purification practice and achieved the state of an arhat, or the state of liberation, in that particular lifetime. Yeah, or Jesimila Repa, you know, in Tibet, who killed 30 something people and then, you know, generated regret, purified, and achieved even enlightenment in one lifetime. Yeah, so karma can be purified, right? So it's a changeable factor. Yeah, so that's a few things to be known about karma. Yeah, so karma is divided in a threefold division of virtuous, non-virtuous, and neutral, right? So virtue, meaning that which produces happiness, that's the definition, right? Non-virtue is classified as that which produces suffering, right? And then neutral is kind of not indicated by the Buddha as either virtue or non-virtue. Yeah, for example, just like that. The act of just looking up like that, you know? It's like without a particular motivation, it's kind of a neutral act, you know? Do like this, do like that. You know, that's kind of a neutral activity. Yeah, so that doesn't really produce particular, or maybe if I do like that, then the next life I always sit like that. But it's kind of a neutral aspect, right? It's not really kind of, So that's the threefold division of karma, right? Then when karma becomes kind of heavy or strong, that depends on many factors. Yeah, as we can see, intention is one important one, or motivation, right? And how we act and how we conclude the act, if there is regret about a negative act or not. Yeah, that's, we're going to talk about it more in the 12 links, how karma actually... Because the stronger a particular intention is sometimes, you know, it builds a kind of potential, right? So that's why there's almost so much emphasis in the Buddhist teachings on generate the correct motivation, you know? Because the stronger your motivation is, you know, the more positive your motivation is, then the act and the outcome will be also more inclined to go in a positive direction, right? Of course, it depends on external causes and conditions as well, but that's why we put a lot of emphasis on motivation, as we see later on when I explain when the karma becomes complete. Yeah, one of the first factors in intention is this motivation. Yeah, so when we talked about those who were in discovering Buddhism, we also saw, there was the mind, destructive and constructive emotions. We also talked about a mind can become virtuous, as we just discussed, right? Non-virtuous or neutral by the power of the nature of the particular aspect of the mind, right? Like the mental factor anger is by nature non-virtuous, right? Yeah, so that's one aspect. If this mental factor anger, which is by nature non-virtuous, joins or is accompanied by a main mind of mental consciousness, right? And that mental consciousness can take that aspect of non-virtuous, of anger, right? We talked about, yeah? And another aspect of a mind becoming virtuous is kind of a positive or constructive mental factor, like loving kindness or compassion, yeah? So if you generate that state of mind, and that mind is accompanying your main consciousness, then it becomes a kind of virtuous state, right? A positive state of mind. So, and a neutral state of mind is, you know, like, for example, sleep. Yeah, sleep is consciousness, right? So sleep is a kind of, falls in the category of changeable mental factors. Yeah, so sleep is not virtuous by nature. Yeah, by nature we're talking about. Neither non-virtuous by nature. But it depends on the intention. So because we sleep, you know, a few hours every night, so it's important if you generate, that's a very skillful way of accumulating merit, if you generate a positive state of mind just before falling asleep, then it's an easy way to accumulate merit, you know, because we have to sleep anyway, so we might as well, you know, do something to enhance our positive states, right? So, and one thing, if you habituate yourself again and again, just before into the state of sleep, to generate a positive state of mind, you know, think about love and kindness and compassion, or bodhicitta, or, you know, think about or emptiness. So if you're thinking about those things just before falling asleep, then it has the capacity for the sleep to become virtuous, right? So if you fall, and you can notice, no, if you fall asleep and you're still irritated with a particular person or situation, and you fall asleep in the middle of that, then you wake up and the mind is still a bit kind of not very peaceful, you know, because the continuity of consciousness carries on, right? So the start of a particular continuum of consciousness, if that's motivated in a particular way, it carries that kind of potential throughout, right? So that's with sleep also the case, you know? So that's why this motivation is so important, you know? So then there's two types of motivation, also important to know. There's a motivation at the time of the cause and a motivation at the time of the action. Yeah, so that means, for example, there's another friend of yours who has a problem and likes to talk, right? Likes to talk with you about different difficulties in life, right? So as soon as you hear that news, then you say, okay, I come by and we talk, right? So as soon as you hear the news and you motivate yourself, okay, maybe I can be of help, right? So then that's the motivation and time of the course. You generate a kind of positive attention, okay, I'm going to help this person, right? And then next day, just before you're going, yeah, to the person, before you leave your house or your room, then also you think about that, I'm going to try to help this person, right? So then, that's still a motivation time of the course, right? So then, as soon as you enter the room of that particular individual and you sit together, then still you try to have a good intention. That's the motivation and the time of the action. Yeah, you see that? So many scriptures, and especially in Vinaya, scriptures on moral discipline and the Abhidhamma, where it talks about mind and this, they put a lot of emphasis on this causal motivation, because that's the first initial step of the positive intention in this case, right? So that means that will carry on over a long period of time. Yeah, so that means if you generate a positive state of mind in the beginning of an act, yeah, then it becomes easier to repeat that in particular, because mindfulness starts to remember that intention, right? So then throughout the process of before engaging in the act and actually engaging in the act, that causal motivation still helps you to go in a particular direction, right? So that's why motivation in time of the cause is very important, you know what they say. Yeah, and then there's the motivation in time of the act as well. Yeah, so the causal motivation is being considered extremely important. So that's the same for the sleep, right? So you can, if you motivate yourself in that way, then, yeah. And another positive aspect of that is, if you habituate yourself every time just before falling asleep to have this positive state of mind, not only you will have a peaceful sleep, right, which is a bonus, right, but also you habituate your mind that at the time of death, also, which is a very similar process, you will be able to generate similar states of mind, right? So we're also going to die one day as we sleep every day. Also, we're going to die one day. That's also a given. Yeah, we cannot escape that, you know. So then also, if this positive state of mind at time of death is very essential. Yes, we will see in the 12 links as well. For yourself and for other people who are passing, it's very important to try to help to generate a positive state of mind, right? So whatever religion or faith or you know, form of life the person is following, according to that you try to motivate the person, right? Yeah, so Buddhism is maybe not the best for everybody, yeah, so it depends on what that person actually, their interest is, in which field is their interests, and then you try to generate a positive state of mind according to that. Yeah, that's, yeah, there's a few things about the introduction of karma, right? So then another few aspects of karma I have to explain is kind of, there's four aspects of karma, but actually, yeah, the main aspects of karma to be understood is that karma in one way is definite in the sense that virtue produces happiness, right? And non-virtue produces suffering, and not the other way around. Yeah, so that's kind of the law of nature. Yeah, so karma is definite in that way. It's not the Buddha invented this kind of law, right? Or made this law, because this law already existed before the Buddha came to earth, right? So the Buddha saw this and understood this law of cause and effect relationships, right? So same as fire is hot and burning, that fire is hot and burning, we cannot change that nature of fire, right? But we can prevent our hand from touching it. You know, so that means we cannot change that nature of hot and burning, but we can play within that cause and effect relationship to prevent harm. You know, see that? Yeah. So the Buddha saw this. Same with anger produces suffering. That nature of that anger never will produce happiness. That also we cannot change. That's the nature of cause and effect relationships, right? Same if you put here a seed with all the right conditions of fertilization, heat, moisture, if everything is present, it has the potential to grow, right? Yeah. So that nature to grow, or the potential to grow, we cannot change. Yeah. We cannot say, okay, put some rice, yeah, in a kind of container, and all the right conditions are present. It will never grow into a corn plant to produce corn, or coconuts, or bananas. Yeah. Sorry, my example is still fixed on India. What do we have in UK? Fruit, apple, apples, yeah. Yeah, apple and a pear, right? So if you have a seed of an apple, it will never produce a tree to produce pears or oranges. Yeah. Oranges not in the UK, I think, no. Yeah. So also that depends on the climate and cause and conditions, right? You can see that nature of cause and effect relationship, we can play with conditions, but the essential laws we cannot change, right? In the sense that anger produces suffering, right? A seed of a pear will never produce a tree to produce apples, right? So that nature we cannot change. But we can play within that nature. If you want to produce apples, you take the seed of an apple, right? So that we can play with. So same with our mind. We know anger produces suffering. That cause and effect relationship is a kind of law of reality that we cannot change. But we can prevent anger from coming into being, right? So we can prevent negative states of mind from coming into being and generate positive states of mind. Yeah. In that way, we shift our direction in the future to experience more happiness and less suffering. So the Buddha saw that reality. So that's why in Tibetan there is even a saying, Tendral Dik, you know, means to organize, depend origination. Not we can change the laws, but we can act according to the law of depend origination. Right? So meaning we generate constructive way of thinking and constructive kind of emotions, which produces kind of happiness, and we apply antidotes towards negative or destructive emotions and prevent suffering. You see that? So that's, we can play with that law of causality, right? So that's a way how, why we have to understand karma. You know? So that's, the Buddha said karma is definite. That first one, that karma is definite, meaning virtue produces happiness, non-virtue produces suffering, and neutral produces neutral results, right? So that's kind of a thing to be known. Yeah, so that's kind of karma is definite, first thing. The second aspect of karma is that it's multiplying, has the potential to multiply. Yeah, so same as a seed, though a seed is so tiny, right? If you have the right conditions, it can grow in a plant, and that plant into a tree, and that tree in a huge tree, right? There's this kind of incredible trees, right? You can, in the US, I think they make a hole inside them with a car, you cannot go underneath, you know? So there's this potential to, or you just take a huge apple tree, you know, it produces so many apples, you know, just from one tiny seed, you know? So the same for our potentials in our mind, same thing. Positive as well as negative, right? That they can produce huge results. Yeah? So that potential is there, right? So that the potential to increase. That's kasa. The second factor. So because that potential to increase is present, that's why it's mostly advisable every day, you know, like the Kadampa Gishis in the early time, they had these white stones and black stones, right? So at the end of the day, they would put a stone according to their actions, and then calculate how, you know, just review the day, if they did the day well or not. You know, very honest. So if you don't, if you're not honest with yourself, you will never change, right? So you have to acknowledge your mistakes and rejoice in the positive things. You know, so it can even go to the extent talking to yourself. You know, to it's a very it's a very good way of practice. You know, to be honest in this way. You know, so Geshe Ben, he was one of the most famous ones in this regard. So he used to be a criminal, and he used to be a bandit and steal a lot of things from others. And his name was like, you know, just by hearing his name, people in a certain area in Tibet, they were just freaking out, because he was very kind of scary personality also, maybe. So one day he was standing, and then he was standing next to a very old lady, and then he was talking about this bandit, right? And that old lady all of a sudden starts to shake, just by hearing the name of the bandit, right? And then Geshe Ben thought, oh, what did I do, you know? Then he started to see how much harm he brought to humans in that area, you know? And then he generated regret. And then went high up in the mountain and became an incredible practitioner, you know? He became ordained, and then when he received food with the wrong motivation, he would just grab his own hand and say, hold the thief, hold the thief. And he was shouting that out, you know, to give himself a lesson. You know, so but he is one of the famous persons who used these kind of white and black stones at the end of the day. And when he did things well, he also would say, oh, very good, Sutam Gyatson, very good. You know, so that means, it sounds very stupid, but it's a very nice way to be honest with yourself and move forward, you know. So yeah, I talk to myself sometimes, but yeah, that's anyway. So then if you're honest in that way, so if you see you have done something negative, and understand that negativity in this, especially with this aspect of increase, then you generate kind of interest to purify it, yeah, because the potential to increase is there, right? So then if you did something negative, right? So, because we're not perfect human beings yet, yeah, so we make mistakes, and it's possible to purify those mistakes, yeah, with what we discussed many times, the four opponent powers. Yeah, so if you have regret, right? That's the first one. Regret, you know, acknowledging that you did something wrong, right? And we also talked about that a regret should be not a guilt feeling, because that's not very constructive, right? So regret is a kind of acknowledging that you did something wrong and why you did it wrong, right? So that's very important, you know, because if you did something wrong, for example, you said something not nice to another person, right? So then understanding by you verbally expressing this, that other person also, we don't know, right? Because we say something and we walk away. But that person also has feeling, you know? So that means by hearing something like that, if somebody says something similar to you, you feel hurt, right? You mentally, you get disturbed by it. And maybe we start thinking about it for hours or all night long sometimes, you know? So that means that that simple act has a result, right? So then if you understand how that result can actually escalate in another person's continuum of experiencing suffering, right? So then you understand that aspect of your action, and then you regret. You say, okay, that was not correct. I shouldn't do that, you know? So understanding that aspect of having made a mistake, right? So if you go into the extreme of, you know, this kind of guilt, then it's not very constructive, because then you think, oh, I'm always like this, and I'm not good, and this, that, that. And then it's not a very constructive way of thinking, right? So then regret is much better, yeah? So a regret of acknowledging the mistakes, right? So that's the first one, right? The second one, as we saw, the antidote, yeah? Or the extra purification practice, yeah? Anyway, we're going to talk about these four powers, but I just make it complete. And then the power of reliance, right? So that we have created an act. Whatever we do, negative, yeah? Whatever negative deeds or positive deeds we do, we always do it in relation to somebody else, right? Or sometimes we do it to our mind, right? But generally speaking, physical and verbal activities, mostly in relation with others, right? So that means that because we've done harm to others, with the power of reliance, we oppose that by thinking, may all sentient beings be free of suffering, right? So the more positive states of mind you have in this direction, may all sentient beings be free of suffering, yeah, which is the definition of compassion, and may all sentient beings abide in happiness, which is the definition of love and kindness, then you have a kind of purification tool to purify the negative things you've done in relation with others, right? And then from a Buddhist perspective, the power of reliance is twofold. Yeah, so the power of reliance from a Buddhist perspective is taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Yeah, because other persons are twofold, sentient beings and Buddhas, right? So we have always done something negative in relation with either sentient beings or Buddhas. To purify negative things we've done in relation to Buddhas, we take refuge, right? To purify negative things we've done in relation with sentient beings, we generate this bodhicitta. Yeah, so that's why the power of reliance from a Buddhist practice or Buddhist point of view is twofold, right? So taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Because in relation with those two individuals of Buddhas and sentient beings, you purify the negative deeds, right? So that's the power of reliance, having the two aspects of, for Buddhist practitioner, of taking refuge and generating the body-mind or bodhicitta. For a secular aspect, yeah, or universal aspect, then you think about, people can think about, you know, generating a wish, you know, for others to have happiness, or a wish for others to be free of suffering, right? So that's kind of secular thing, yeah? So regret, we just talked about, right, is the first power to purify, right? The second one is this power of reliance, yeah? So which is for a Buddhist practitioner twofold, the Buddha taking refuge, or the Buddha Dharma in the Sangha, basically, yeah? And then generating bodhicitta, right? So that's the power of reliance, yeah? So the third one, the actual antidote, or the purification practice, can be many. You know, there can be kind of prostrations, Vajrasattva, Guru Yoga, any thinking about emptiness, or thinking about bodhicitta, any virtuous state of mind, or the generation of a good intention or generation or wanted to be a good human being, right? It's a very simple aspect of what we call virtue opposes non-virtue, right? So that means it's a kind of purification tool or purification factor. Yeah, so that means whatever positive state of mind we generate actually opposes negative states of mind, right? Because we know in our consciousness at one particular time only one moment of mind can arise, right? In regard to a particular object, yeah? Or you like person A or you dislike person A at one particular moment. You cannot like and dislike person A with the same mind at the same time. Only maybe one day when the weather is nice, you like the person. When the weather is not nice, you don't like the person. But that's two different minds, right? So with one mind, you either like the person or dislike the person, right? At one particular moment, one particular instant. That means that the more virtue or positive state of mind you generate, then the negative states of mind lose their potential to become manifest, right? Right? You see that? Yeah. So that's the kind of reason that the more positive state of mind you generate, negative state of mind, they lose their potential, right? Yeah. So in that same regard, also this third opponent power of the power of the actual antidote is any virtuous state of mind. And then the most superior state of mind is, of course, bodhicitta and emptiness, right? Because if you read Shantideva's Bodhisattva Charyavatara, then bodhicitta is so incredible from the point of view of purification, you know? Because if you think about, if you have real bodhicitta, then it's all sentient beings without exception, right? All sentient beings without exception. So all sentient beings you have harmed in the past, so many, you know? Now you promise to achieve the state of enlightenment for all of them, without exception, right? So that means it has a, not only a wish for sentient beings to be free of suffering temporarily or have temporarily happiness, but wanted to lead them to full enlightenment, right? So that means that bodhicitta is an incredible, strong purification practice to every negative state of mind, you know? So there's a lot of very interesting stories about Tonglen, I will tell you later on maybe, if there's time, of people who have purified diseases, you know, just with Tonglen practice, because it's also karma related, you know. So a very powerful aspect, you know, that's the antidote. Yeah? So bodhicitta and emptiness, you know, because the ultimate kind of antidote to its ignorance is this emptiness, right? So without emptiness, we cannot achieve nirvana. Without emptiness, we cannot achieve liberation. Yeah, so without emptiness, we cannot cut ignorance, you know, so that ignorance we're going to talk about. Yeah. So that's the third opponent power of the antidote, right, we're talking about now. Then there's also other kind of aspects of Vajrasattva. There's a kind of a Buddha, aspect of the Buddha, who has a purification aspect. You know, when Vajrasattva was a bodhisattva and was on the paths for many eons, which is a very long period of time, having this wish to become a Buddha, had this kind of wish, if I become a Buddha, may all sentient beings who recite my name or my mantra, you know, or do my practice, may they purify all negative deeds. So they had this wish, and not just for a day, or 2 days, or a year, or 100 years, no. This wish was generated over a subsequent long period of lifetimes, right? So that built up an incredible potential. And especially if you have bodhicitta, then this potential becomes incredibly strong. So that means that if you rely on a practice like Vajrasattva, then reciting that particular mantra has a very uncommon potential to purify negative deeds, right? So it has a potential to purify all negative deeds if you do it, if all the right conditions are present, and you recite this mantra 100,000 times, if all the conditions are present, it has the power to purify all negative deeds created. You know, very interesting. Yeah. So that's one practice, Vajrasattva. Then prostrations, those who have seen people, you know, full-length prostration. Bodh Gaya, for example, very famous place, people do prostrations, you know. So also prostrations, very powerful practice to purify, or Nyunye practice, you know. Very, very strong purification practices. So there's many aspects, depends where you have a karma connection with, to purify negative deeds, right? So that's the antidote. Then, that's number three, right, of the for opponent powers, yeah? So then the fourth one is the power of resolve, promising not to engage in this negativity in the future, right? Yeah, so that's true, no? For the ordinary life, same thing. We make a mistake, we acknowledge the mistake with regret, right? And we promise, or at least try to promise, not to do it again. Yeah, so the power of resolve is, you know, not doing this act again. Maybe for the morning, or for one day, or 2 days. Yeah, so also try to promise what you can keep. Yeah, it's better to take small steps, but those steps are progressing over a long period of time, than try to jump and then you cannot, you know, cannot really hold that promise, and then you lose the interest and then you put it all aside, right? So it's much more constructive to go step by step. And same thing, you know, if you have too many expectations, you know, people do a retreat or something or a practice and then they, oh, wow, yeah, this, that. But then, it doesn't go like that quick. To change the mind is not instant, right? So to change the mind takes time. So that means that to change the mind takes time. That means that, you know, you have to have also a bit of power of resolve. You know, you have to promise according to what you can keep. Yeah. So I'm not going to shout at this person tomorrow morning. you try to promise, right? Afternoon, I don't know yet. But at least you have the intention to do it for a particular period of time, right? And then you have, because a smaller period of time is there, then you're much more alert in that period, right? You see that? So then it's much more capacity to prevent you from making the same mistake. Because you're much more, the mindfulness is much stronger at that time. Yeah. So that's the power of resolve. Yeah. So there's four opponent powers, right? To purify negative deeds. Yeah. So we said the power of regret, bodhicitta and refuge, or wanting others to be free of suffering and accomplish happiness, right? That's the power of reliance. Yeah. Then the power of the antidote is any virtuous state of mind, and in particular, you know, bodhicitta and emptiness, and the different practices like vajrasattva, prostrations, you know. And then the third one is, oh sorry, the fourth one is the power of resolve. Yeah. So why do I explain this here with we talking about the factors of karma, right? We said karma is definite. And the second factor was the increase, right? So at the time of increase, I explained the four opponent powers. Why? Because karma has the potential to increase, right? As we saw, like one seed can produce an apple tree with many apples and many seeds, you know? So same for our karmic actions. They can produce this increase. Yeah? So if you're on a daily basis, because we do positive, negative, and neutral activity throughout the day. Yeah? So if we understand this aspect of increase, then even a slight negative thing can, if you don't confess it and if you don't purify it, it can propel in a kind of like a snowball effect, right? You know, in the early days when you make snowballs, you roll and then they become bigger and bigger. And if you have a hill and then you let it roll down, it can be huge. And it can be disastrous down in the valley when it's huge and becomes kind of, you know, a glacier coming down, something like that. So that means karma is also like that. You know, it can has the potential to increase. So to stop that increase, then it's advisable to, on a daily basis, to have these four opponent powers, do a few prostrations of vajrasattva. You know, vajrasattva, even I just said in vajrasattva, it says, and that's the Buddha who said, it's not, yeah, so anyway, but that if you do 100,000, with all the conditions being complete, you can purify all negative karma. If you do 21 a day, then you stop the increase potential of karma, right? So that's 21 of the long or 28 of the short one. So that's kind of many practices that can be done to the kindness of the Buddha to prevent us from getting negative karma increased. You know? So that's why I thought I explained the four opponent powers in relation with this increase. Because, you know, that's a kind of aspect of reality we can work with. You know, so that's why, So then go back to the four aspects of karma, right? So we talked about karma is definite, yeah, because positive karma produces positive results, negative karma produces negative results, right? Virtue produces happiness, non-virtue produces suffering. That's law of reality we cannot change, right? Yeah, so that is definite. That's why the Buddha said karma is definite, right? But we can play with the conditions to prevent positive karma from coming in, or so negative karma from coming into being, and generate positive karma, right? So that we can play with, you know. So that's why the Buddha said there's a way out. There's a way out, or out of suffering. Because we can change the mind, and we can act according to this law to prevent negative karma from coming into being, and to practice positive states of mind that causes happiness. So if you take away, with this purification aspect we just discussed, you purify previous created negative karma, right? Then you prevent negative karma from coming into being, by training your mind, right? So there's a purification going on of negative karma we created in the past. Then you don't create new negative karma by living according to this kind of morality, according to the law of cause and effect, right? Yeah, like a plane. So it's like a plane, it's like the same thing, you know. You fly to the city of liberation, you know. You leave your negative karma behind because you purify, right? And then you increase positive states of mind and prevent negative state of mind from coming into being. So then you go there. There you go. You see that? Yeah. Yeah. Without pollution, you know. So it's kind of, you go, you know. So that means if you purify negative karma, right? And on a daily basis you do purification practice. So even if there's some small new negative karma be created, you prevent the increase, right? Sometimes you do a little more purification, so you purify the past, and in the future you go constructive way forward. So then there's a way up, right? You see that? You know, so if you understand karma well, you can act according to it, and you can move to more constructive states of mind and more happiness in the future, and eliminating cause for suffering, so no suffering, right? So yeah, so that's the increase. Yeah, then the third aspect of karma. So karma is definite, right? We saw there's a potential to increase. Yeah. So then, the third aspect of karma is that you cannot experience the karma that is created by somebody else. That means karma is individual, generally speaking. Yeah. So it means that if you've done something wrong, there's not your neighbor will experience the result of that. Or if you did something good, it's not that your neighbor will experience the result of that. It's what I said is the law of cause and effect within the continuum of a particular individual, within the continuum of a person, right? So that means that we can only experience the things we are responsible for, we have done in the past, and what we do at the present to propel in the future. Yeah, so it's kind of individual based, so to say. Yeah, same thing, you know, we know, like, the pizza example, some people like pizza, some people don't. I mean, there's not that many who don't, but, you know, that's, we taste things in different ways, right? So, that means that it's all individual based, and there's a reason for that, no? It's also sometimes with a person who is sick, same sickness, same medicine, some person, one individual get cured, the other one doesn't, right? So, it's more than just kind of general. Yeah, there's so many complex, there's a very complex system of individual streams of consciousness, right? Yeah, so that means there's individual stream of consciousness. Same time of birth, you know, when the parents, when the ovum and the sperm, there's no issue of a mistake or fault or sickness or whatsoever. So both are perfectly okay, future father and mother, right? But then when the sperm and ovum comes together, there's no conception sometimes, happens, right? So that means that if there's no karma for consciousness to dive into this fertilized egg cell, then it will never develop, right? So they can see, it's not that black and white, only physical, yeah? So we say in Buddhist interpretation of the concept consciousness is not matter, right? Consciousness is not physical, consciousness is something else. Right, so consciousness is something as we define it, clear and knowing, which has a continuum. And that continuum of consciousness of one particular individual has no beginning, because every moment of consciousness is previous caused by a previous moment. And a previous moment is caused by its previous moment, and that by its previous moment. You cannot pinpoint or find a beginning as such. Yeah? So that means that our individual streams of consciousness are there since the beginner's lifetime, right? So that, especially if you're really interested in this, then you should study the Chittamatran view of reality. Yeah, when they talk about actually how individuals perceive things on an individual level by the power of the previous inclinations or by the power of previous imprints or potentials in the continuum. Very interesting. Like, for example, this table, each of us here looks at this table and what appears to your eye consciousness is completely different. The general table idea is the same, but we look from different angles, for example, right? Yeah, so it comes from a different kind of, the object appears in different ways. And same for tasting, particular food, right? We have different tastes, right? So for example, here, thanks to Sue, we have incredible food, very healthy food, with a lot of vegetables. But if I have a few friends of the monastery and ask them to come here, they put the vegetables aside. They say, no, that's for the cows. That's not for us. Because they don't like vegetables, you know. So even in the monastery, when we were sitting and they had a few vegetables in the vegetable stew or with the dal, they take it sometimes out because they're not used to eat vegetables in Tibet, right? Because there's no vegetables there in the early days, right? Up in the mountains. So that means people have different kind of habits, right? Or tastes. You know, so that is true for our eye consciousness, it's true for our taste, and some people like classical music, some people hate classical music, right? Some people like, rave party music, some people don't like rave party music, you know. So that means it's individual based, right? Then we say, yeah, that's just interest. But where does that interest come from? That's the question, right? And like people in life, some people become very spiritual, some people become very materialistic, you know, some little children without being taught, some they kill insects and some they save them, So that means there's habituation patterns that comes from the Buddhist point of view, might come from previous inclinations or habituations, right? So very interesting, because if you study Stevenson's research of children remembering previous lifetimes, there's a previous personality and a present. So the present personality remembers events out of the previous personality, as well as birthmarks of the cause of death of the previous personality. If you put those things together, from the point of view of statistics, it's kind of one in a million or a billion possibilities, right? So, and it repeats itself in many cases, right? It's like 2,000 cases being studied. And then you see that, habituation patterns of a previous personality carries on in the present. Very interesting. And that's individual based, right? That's an individual stream of consciousness. So Stevenson says, I don't say I prove reincarnation, but there is something that carries the information, as he calls it, from a previous personality to the present. Yeah, so that's what carries that information from the previous personality to the present. That's what we call in Buddhism the continuity of consciousness, right? Yeah, in a very simplified way. Yeah, so that continuity of consciousness is individual. You see that? Yeah. So that means the causes we created in the past, we will experience and not our neighbors, right? Yeah. But then some people say, but what is this collective karma then? So there's also a possibility, right, that a few people gather together and they have similar karmas. Not exactly the same, but similar. You know, so that's why people then gather together in a particular place and have a particular experience, right? So yeah. Tibet, for example, being occupied by the Chinese, that happened by many causes and conditions. Right? So one of the causes and conditions could be that the majority of the Tibetan people had a particular karma for this action or for this kind of ripening result, right? Because nothing happens random without causes and conditions, you know? So that's sometimes how they explain it also. You know? So that means, but still, same people when few people have, for example, the karma to be in accident, but some people have the karma to die in accident, and some people don't, right? So there's also karma is very complex, So that means that, it's a mixture of many, many. As I said, the more variables there are, the bigger the environment, the more difficult it will be to understand what's going on, right? Yeah. So with black and white kind of analogy of, a state of anger produces suffering, that's easy to realize and to understand, right? But the more complex the things become, the more causes and conditions that are present over a longer period of time, then it will be very difficult to understand why and how. Anyway, so that's what we actually talk about. Karma is being individual. Yeah, you see that? Yeah. So that means that we won't experience the results of others negative or positive deeds. Yeah, you see that? Yeah, so that means karma is individual. Yeah, that's number three, right? And then number four is karma will not get exhausted until the result is being experienced, right? That's karma will not exhaust. The potential will remain until the result comes about. So if you put a seed here, nothing will happen, right? But the potential to grow is still there. But if I put it a few weeks later in a pot with soil and some, you know, the right temperature, the right moisture, then it will grow, right? So the potential is also present. So if the right conditions are met, karma comes to ripening, right? So the same for our... So sometimes happens, no? We have a thought come up, where does that come from, you know? But it comes from the past. And it's a matter of meeting the conditions to let it ripen, right? Or a particular sickness or different aspects from that as well. When we meet the right conditions, like for the time, we're quite comfortable, but we still have the condition, we still have the cause to get a cold and a fever, right? But it's just if we don't put the right clothes on our body and we go out and there's a strong wind and cold, we get a cold, then we get sick, right? So there's a complexity of causes and conditions playing a role as well. Yeah. So, but the potential that has been created in the past will come to ripening when the conditions are present, right? Unless it gets purified with negative karma or destroyed with positive karma, right? So a negative karma can result into suffering, right? So that result of suffering will come about when the right conditions come together, right? Yeah, so that law we cannot change, right? But we can purify it. As we just discussed with the four opponent powers, we can purify negative karma. And then in the future, if those conditions come, then the seed doesn't have the potential anymore to produce a result. You see that? So the purification aspect of that is very important, because karma will only get exhausted, you know, when the result comes about. You know, so that means that potential is sitting there, it just needs the right conditions to get triggered and to grow. You know, so that means, but if we take away that potential, then even if the conditions are met, you know, if I have a seed and I take away the potential from the seed to destroy it whatsoever, then whatever moisture, heat, moisture, fertilization is there, it will never grow, right? Because the potential is taken away. So the same true for our karma. So that means that if you take away the potential by the power of purification for negative karma, it will not be able to produce a negative result. So that's the benefit of purification, right? Yeah. So then the question will be, but what can we purify and what can we not purify? That's the question. You know, that's a lot of things that are debated in the Madhyamika Avatara, for example, yeah, Chandrakirti's text on mainly on emptiness, but also talks about, especially Lama Tsongkhapa's Eliminating the Thought, with Thupten Jinpa translated, probably it's going to be published next year, I think he told me. So that means that, very clearly explained, also in the Bodhisattva Chara Avatara, the commentaries on that, you can see that the positive karma can also be destroyed. Negative karma can be destroyed as well as positive karma, right? So negative karma can be destroyed by the power of these four opponent powers, right? Positive karma can also be destroyed, you know, to a certain extent, by a strong affliction, like anger is the most strongest one, right? So anger is, I'm just looking at the schedule, yeah? So anger has the potential to destroy a positive state of mind. Right? We can see, you know, when we're very well motivated and you know, very positive, and then all of a sudden we get irritated, that whole positiveness is taken away, you know? So this isn't a subjective thing, but actually what can be destroyed by the power of anger or any other affliction, right, is the potential for the result to come about. Yeah, so that's very important to understand. Also with purification, same thing. What do we purify? What aspect of negative karma do we purify? Is the potential of the result to come about, right? So that means we prevent the result from coming into being. one aspect, right? It depends on which of those four opponent powers are all present and strong, and to which extent they're present. We're going to talk about how to get it within the 12 links. Yeah. So that means that if you have the four opponent powers we just discussed, you can purify the potential for the results to come about. Yeah, from the point of view of negative karma. Afflictions like anger, they can destroy positive karma from the point of view of the potential from the reason to come about. Right? So you do a very good act, right, that has a potential to experience happiness in the future. Yeah? But if you get angry in between, just before experiencing the result, then that potential can be destroyed and the result of happiness cannot come. You see that? So that's with anger can take away the potential for the result to come about. Yeah? So that's why anger is being considered as something to take care of, in the sense of practicing patience, right? So that's why Shantideva put a whole chapter on this aspect of practicing patience, right? Because it's a very destructive state of mind. You know, anger is one of the most destructive emotions we can think of. You know, because people go to the extent of murder, right? So I always put the example of one of my friends in prison in Center Prison in Bangalore. Out of anger, he killed a person, right? So that means a few minutes not in control, yeah, emotional hijack happened, he committed the crime of murder, and he's in prison for now for 14 years already, you know? So that means so much suffering just from one act, you know? And then, of course, the harm you did to the other person, including the family, etc., etc., you know? So you can see that anger is very destructive. Yeah, so every positive state of mind, anger can just, you know, that's why there's so much emphasis always. So people say, oh, the Buddhists always talk about anger and practicing patience all the time, you know. But you can see, because it's a very destructive state of mind, so it's something to do with, to deal with, you know, to make sure it doesn't come up in the future. Because it can destroy it, can destroy these positive potentials, you know. Yeah. So that if as soon as you understand the positive karma, what is being destroyed is the potential for the result to come about, right? The seed cannot be destroyed, in the sense of there's still a potential left. That's certain interpretations, they say it has the possibility to again do something good, right? Because there's a potential, right? So the potential cannot be taken away, right? Of the positive karma. But the result, the potential for the result to come about can be taken away. But that potential or the seed that is left can produce similar states of mind in the future to do good things, right? You see that? So that's a very essential point to be understood, is that the seed of positive states of mind can never be taken away. That's a very important thing to remember, you know? But the potential for the result to come about can be taken away or can be destroyed by anger or other afflictions. But the initial seed, right? The potential is destroyed, but still has a kind of possibility to generate another virtuous state of mind in the future, right? To do something similar. So that cannot be destroyed. You see that? That's very important to know, because with negative karma, with the four opponent powers we saw, we can eliminate the potential for the result to come about, right? Right? Negative karma, but if we purify with the four opponent powers, we can prevent that result, experiencing that result, right? Of negative karma. Yeah. So that means that but the seed also of negative karma can be taken away with direct perception of emptiness, visualization of emptiness, right? So we talked about many times that, as we're going to talk about after the break, when we start with 12 links, everything is originated in ignorance, right? So this ignorance is a misunderstanding of reality. Yeah, so it is a kind of not knowing how the self actually exists. Thinking the self exists inherently, thinking the self exists all by itself without dependence. Based on that, an affliction arises, right? And based on that, we create karma. Yeah, so this root cause for the affliction is this ignorance, right? So that can be taken away with a mind understanding reality. Because a mind that understands reality is exactly the opposite of this mind of ignorance, as we're going to see. You know, so that means you can take away the seeds for negative karma. So that is a very interesting conclusion, because same our example of flying to the city of liberation and enlightenment. Why is it possible? Because we just talked about you purify negative karma, right? You practice good deeds and virtue, right? And you go up, right? You see that? So that's even more true from this point of view, because negative karma together with the seeds, negative karma can be taken, the negative karma, the results, the potential for the result to come about can be taken away with four opponent powers. And the seeds can be taken away with emptiness, or directly perceiving, mind directly perceiving emptiness. You see that? So that means that all negative karma together with the seeds and potentials can be purified. And positive karma, the seeds can never be destroyed. Only the potential for the results come about can be destroyed. You see that? So the more positive things we do, and the more we purify negative deeds, and then on a certain stage when you start realizing emptiness, then you can see it's kind of not just a plane, but kind of a rocket to the city of liberation and enlightenment, you know? So that's very important to know. It's very courageous kind of, gives us faith, hope in the future, you know, to go in that direction, because you can change the mind, yeah? And with these four opponent powers, you can purify negative karma. You prevent yourself from creating more negative karma in the future. So there's only positive to be experienced. On top of that, one day you can understand emptiness, and you cut this ignorance, so there's no new causes for samsara, and there you go. You know, so that's out of the wheel of life, so to say. Yeah. So that's the material I was planning to cover in the first session, and then in the next session we will go into the 12 links. Yeah. So if you drink some tea and you look at this. This little bit, and you look at the tanga. A few of us we looked last time, yeah. And then you can learn a lot, yeah. So then the tea break becomes kind of incredible tea break. So we have a tea break for, let's say, 20 minutes. 11:40, we meet again. Is okay? Yeah. Oh yeah. First, if there are questions, otherwise maybe we meet later. Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about actions in terms of mental, physical, verbal and physical.
Yeah.
So if, say, the intention, I don't know, this is a silly example, but let's say my intention to pray for, the benefit of all sentient beings, including Donald Trump, for example.
Including him, yeah. And including the Trump number two in the UK.
Yes, exactly, both of them, stems from a deep irritation with what they're doing. I'm bored of them. I just want them to be well.
Yeah.
So the intention is actually a form of anger, irritation. My intention for a good deed, which would be to pray for them, is actually a form of anger because I'm irritated by them.
Yeah.
And so I want to kind of them to get better.
Ali, you won't, yeah.
Yeah, so the intention is not a positive one.
Yeah.
Does that mean that, does that generate negative karma, positive karma?
I mean, what do you think? Is it like something positive or something negative?
Well, if the intention behind the deed is more important than the deed itself, then I don't really know.
Because, I mean, you always have to see, we have a motivation, right? Mm. Or intention, yeah, as we're going to talk about later on, how that works. And also we have a kind of afflictions, yeah? Or positive state of mind and negative state of mind.
Mm.
Yeah, so that means you have to see if an affliction is present, right, of an act. If an affliction is present of an act, that act will never become virtuous, even if it's motivated positively. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this famous example of the Buddha in one of his previous lifetimes, when he was on board of a ship, and he knew, because he was a bodhisattva, right? So he had high realizations. So he knew he could see lifetimes of people, you know? So then he knew there's this captain was planning to kill all the 500 people on board and steal all the possessions, you know? Right. So then the Buddha thought, if this captain kills all the 500 people, this captain will be go to incredible long period of suffering, and these 500 people will lose their life, right? There's so much suffering for them and family members, etc., etc. So if I take the captain, right? With bodhicitta motivation, yeah? Then I, because he's high realized, so he can shoot the consciousness of the captain in one of the Pure Lands, right? And then with the pure motivation, he can act in that way, a bodhisattva, right? But still, he creates the act of murder, right? By taking the cap. So that doesn't mean, even if the motivation is pure for a particular act, if the action, though there's no affliction present, but the nature of the act is negative, then still there's a kind of negative result of that aspect. Yeah, because there's no exception to karma, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because the motivation, as we just talked about, the motivation, especially the causal one, is very influential. Yeah. So that's why it's karma is a very complex thing, right? But there's some within affliction is very clear, as we're going to see later on. If there's an affliction involved in an act, then the outcome is not positive, right? And we can see, you know, if we want to say something to a person and there's an irritation, right? Then the outcome is not very positive, because there's no constructive way of thinking to make a decision what to do, what's most beneficial, right? But when there's no affliction present, and there's a clarity and practice and patience and very constructive thinking, you can still say something to a person and correct a person, and then the whole act becomes positive, right? You see that? But as soon as the affliction is present, then you can see the mind gets disturbed and there's no clarity and you make the wrong decision, right? So that's why there's so much emphasis on this emotional intelligence, you know, to subdue your mind and to make sure you make the right decision. And it's true on many levels of society, to, you know, if you read those research about, you know, the mind of a leader, you know, those kind of aspects, that even on a business level, if you practice with selflessness, compassion, and mindfulness, you'll be very successful, right, in the long term. So that means that it's not that the scientists with examining, I was like 35,000 people, leaders they examined in this research, right? It's not that, that's a law of reality the Buddha talked about 2,500 years ago, right? So certain aspects of science start to see similar aspects that they see as maybe that's reality, right? So that's, you can see as soon as a affliction is involved, then the outcome is not constructive. That's basically a conclusion, right? But the Buddha said, and also if you study the different types of psychology or the movements of emotional intelligence or the kind of mindfulness training, compassion, constructive compassion training, the benefits have been proven, right? So that means that there's a law of cause and effect, what we call karma, right? Which is there, which we can examine, and we can act according to that and then get the benefits if you practice in the correct way. You see that? Yeah? Yeah? Any other questions? Otherwise, we break. Yeah? So then, instead of 40, 45. Yeah? 11:45? Meet? Yeah?